The Milwaukee Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast joins you once again. The Milwaukee Bucks are 12-4 on the season. They've won two of the last three games since we last joined you. All home games at Pfizer Forum in Milwaukee. Monday night, they take down the Denver Nuggets once again, 104-98, completing the sweep of kind of one of the Western Conference's better teams. It was another comeback effort that's sort of been the trend lately for the Bucks. They rallied to beat Chicago on November 16th on Friday, just 3 days before this Denver game, 123-104. They were down early, rallied, and then ultimately fell to Memphis on Wednesday, 116-113. That was the first of six straight games at home. They'll have Portland on Wednesday night, then Phoenix on Friday, San Antonio Saturday, before hitting the road again, heading to Charlotte. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. Going to be joined shortly by Matt Velasquez, beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He has been at all these games, so we'll chat a little bit about these last three games, as well as a couple injuries to talk about. John Henson is going to be missing a significant portion of time, and how the Bucks might bounce back from that. Dante DiVincenzo, the first-round draft pick, who's been a very nice player in the early part of the year, he's missing a few games here as well. The Bucks, winning two or three, looks like that it hasn't completely derailed them by any means, but obviously that hurts their depth. So we'll talk to Matt Velasquez about that and a whole lot more. Saw the debut of the City jerseys on Monday night against Denver. Yay or nay on those? They're bright yellow, and there's some strong opinions on both sides. I know we talked about them a little bit last week. Now we've gotten to see them in action. We'll start as we recap the week here. We'll go backwards. We'll start with this game against the Nuggets. Again, the Bucks went down. They did not look good. They were struggling pretty mightily to make baskets at points in this game. Giannis was cold from three. Chris Middleton was cold from three. Brook Lopez wasn't his usual self. I mean, in all, they only hit 30% from three-point range. They were 11 of 36. But they did have enough in the tank in the end, and a lot of that was Eric Bledsoe. He had a great game. He shot 8 of 10 from the field, 23 points, 5 assists, 3 steals, through and three rebounds. I mean, he has been absolutely awesome, and I know we talked about him last week, but we'll talk again with Matt Velasquez about Eric Bledsoe's contributions and how crucial he has been. Giannis had another great game, 29 points, 12 rebounds, 6 assists. His usual output, had a thunderous alley-oop dunk that got the Pfizer Forum crowd to its feet and helped as the Bucks were pushing past Denver. You know, it wasn't a they didn't pull away for good at the end. There were some anxious moments, but ultimately a 104-98 victory. Again, that's a really good Denver team. I mean, they've got some really good players. Nikola Jokic is one of the best international players in the game, not named Giannis. I mean, he might be the best, not named Giannis, at this point in his career. He did have 20 points and 5 assists, 5 rebounds, but again, no one player really took down the Bucks in this game against Denver as the Bucks rallied for victory. The rally was of even more significant mention against the Chicago Bulls, the lowly Chicago Bulls. They're 4-12 now after this game against the Bucks. But they were awesome early. I mean, it was 40-27 after the first quarter. The Bucks only scored 18 points in the second quarter. They were down 22 at one point against a Bulls team that A, isn't good, B, is injured, and C, has Jabari Parker on it. And of course, Jabari is a player the Bucks elected not to keep this offseason, and he looked really good early. He finished with 21 points, 8 rebounds. I mean, his numbers were okay, but the Bulls defense just not good enough down the stretch. The Bucks absolutely surged back in incredible fashion. It was a track meet where the Bucks were doing all the running. It was outscoring the Bulls 46-17 in the third quarter, turning the game on its head. At one point, they were down 22, then they were up 22. They ended up winning by 19. Giannis, 23 points, 13 rebounds, 4 assists. Chris Middleton, 23 points, 10 rebounds, 8 assists, almost a triple-double from Chris Middleton. Bledsoe, again, leading everybody in scoring, 25 and 6 assists for him with 3 steals. Just a really fun game to watch. It was disconcerting a little bit in that the Bulls were able to keep the Bucks held down pretty well in the first half, but In the end, Milwaukee was able to surge past them and win 123-104. To start the week, though, it was a loss to the Memphis Grizzlies, one of the three best teams in the Western Conference as we head into Tuesday's action. 116-113 loss. The Bucks at one point in the fourth quarter had rallied back to lead by 8 points. They were down, and then they surged back and kind of looked like, okay, this is like all these other games where the Bucks have gone down early or at least, you know, midway through the game, and then they come back and they pull away. But in this case, Memphis was able to get back in front and ultimately win the game. Chris Middleton did have a pretty contested three-pointer look at the buzzer. It wasn't a very good look. It was a sort of inbound shoot, catch-and-shoot sort of situation. He was heavily guarded. It bounced off the rim and the backboard. It didn't look like it was going to go in at any point. But, I mean, the Bucks did at least keep it to one possession there. Mark Gasol had a nice game for the Grizzlies, 29 points. Mike Conley, 26 points. He was a major problem down the stretch. And unfortunately, the Bucks were not able to kick off the homestand with a win. Giannis, 31 points, 9 rebounds, his usual output. Chris Middleton, 25 points. Eric Bledsoe adding another 15, 16 off the bench for Pat Connaughton, who has been a pretty nice addition to this team. We're not going to talk about him the way we might talk about the team adding Brook Lopez or Sonny Liasova or even the draft pick Dante DiVincenzo, but Pat Connaughton has been pretty valuable, and he certainly showed up in this game. Also had 6 rebounds. The Bucks again struggling from 3, 9 of 35, 25, a little more than 25%. That's part of the problem. But then again, they didn't shoot well against Denver and came away with the win. There's your recap for the week. Now let's join Matt Velasquez and chat about what he saw when he was watching the Bucks team again improve to 12-4 on the season. And now we are joined by Matt Velasquez. He's the beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, covering your Milwaukee Bucks. And we're recording this on Tuesday, one day after the Bucks defeated the Denver Nuggets in a game that looked kind of bleak at points. And Matt, I guess I always kind of operate under the assumption that if the Bucks do go cold shooting, they're not going to win the game because they rely so heavily on their shooting at this point. That's, though, what happened on Monday night. They went cold shooting, and they still found a way to win the game against a pretty good opponent from the West. How would you explain, what were the Bucks able to do, even though Chris Middleton, Giannis were struggling shooting the ball, that they were able to gut out that victory?
Yeah, I think it just came down to really ramping things up on defense. Eric Bledsoe was really active. Giannis was obviously active inside. Brook Lopez had 3 blocks. They really just kind of brought the energy, as cliche as that might be. They really kind of, you know, brought it in that second half and got off to a good run. And, you know, obviously the Nuggets had built their lead in a large part with kind of mid-range shots and floaters and things like that. And those stopped falling as often as they had. They weren't getting clean looks from three as often. And the Bucks just slowly but surely kind of whittled it down. Giannis went, you know, berserk in the third quarter, just attacking left and right, throwing down dunks, getting layups, just kind of putting the team on his back. And Eric Bledsoe was right there with him in the third, with I think 7 points in that quarter. And then the fourth, Bledsoe kind of resurfaced again late with 2 huge 3-pointers. The Bucks had been pretty bad like all night, you know, on 3-pointers. I think going into the fourth, they might have been 5 of 24, and quickly became 5 of 26. Before Malcolm Brogdon hit one, and then Ersan Ilyasova followed up with another. But then Eric Bledsoe hit 2 in a row when it was a tie game, 89-89, and that kind of set the tone for the rest of the game. And Bledsoe had a hand in almost every basket after that. And you mentioned Chris Middleton. You know, he'd been ice cold, 0-7 on threes. And, you know, the thing about this Bucks team is that even when they start slow, shooting-wise, they're just going to keep shooting. Like, they know that those are good shots. They're going to trust that the shots they're taking are the right ones, and that eventually they're going to fall. And that's what happened for Middleton. It was a tougher look than he had pretty much all night. But he knocked down a 3 with 27.6 seconds left with a hand in his face. And that gave the Bucks a 5-point cushion. And that was enough to hold off Denver for the season sweep.
You're talking about Bledsoe a lot, and certainly we've talked about him already on this podcast quite a bit, but I really hope Bucks fans who aren't maybe as tuned into this team, I hope their impression of him isn't what maybe the reputation was that preceded him before he came to Milwaukee. He was sort of a malcontent in Phoenix. And then, of course, there were a couple sort of highlight-worthy defensive mishaps that happened last year, particularly in that Boston series and the playoff series. But, like, he is on fire, and he is engaged. He is totally – he is the energy when this team needs it. And I know Mike Budenholzer talked about him afterwards, and I know he loves this – you know, the marriage between Eric Bledsoe's game and Mike Budenholzer is obviously paying dividends. And, again, we've talked about it a lot. I look back and I'm like, I can't what was the previous version of Eric Bledsoe? Like, why wasn't that working? Because this guy is crucial, and he has been absolutely essential to what the Bucks have done so far this season.
Yeah, I think that looking at Bledsoe, his numbers don't jump off the page. I mean, 15.2 points, 5.9 assists, 4.6 rebounds, 1.3 steals, you know, almost a block per game. He's only shooting 36% on threes. You know, overall, his effective field goal percentage is a lot higher because he's been so good from two-point range. You know, his effective field goal percentage is third on the team at 57.8. You know, none of those things like really are going to blow you away. But his in the fourth quarter of games and in the second half of games, if you kind of spread it out a little bit, you know, he's really been a huge part of what the Bucks are doing. And he's kind of, you know, I saw someone on Twitter say, you know, kind of use the cliche, he's the straw that stirs the drink, because that's what he is for the Bucks. I mean, you're going to get like great performances from Giannis where he's going to go off and you know, attack the rim and kind of put the team on his back. But that was good enough to get the Bucks back, you know, from down 10 at halftime to up one heading into the fourth. And Giannis only scored 2 points after that. You know, it was really Bledsoe, you know, doing a lot of the scoring late and orchestrating. You know, he got Giannis his only dunk, his only points in the fourth quarter on an alley-oop that you can, as I'm, I think you told me, we can now find in your book of Giannis, the bunch of highlights
yes.
of Giannis throughout the years. So, you know, it was a great dunk. But Eric Bledsoe, just the way that he just affects other teams defensively, you know, Mike Budenholzer was asked kind of about, like, is Eric doing things that are part of your defense or not part of your defense when he's, you know, changing the game like that? And Bud kind of laughed and he was like, yeah, sometimes he does things that we didn't tell him to do, but they're good. You know, he's out there kind of, you know, freelancing a little bit, using his quickness and his athleticism and his strength for the betterment of the team, you know, to get some, you know, blocks or steals or kind of just anticipating certain things and making plays. And, you know, he's been really efficient. I think one of the knocks against Eric Bledsoe in the past was that he took too many bad shots, too many, you know, mid-range shots, too many covered three-pointers, too many, like, way too tough, like, floaters or drives when he could have kicked out or done something else with it. And, you know, it helps when you're making him. Obviously, he was 8 of 10 last night, so every shot, even if it's tough, it looks a lot better. But in the span of this season, which, you know, granted, it's only 16 games, you know, he's been making generally good decisions, you know, with the ball in his hands, deciding when to shoot, when not to shoot, when to create for others, what shots to take. He's cut way down on his mid-range jumper. So you were good for a couple of those per game, you know, especially times where maybe he wasn't getting enough looks or he felt like he needed to, like, do something. You know, those were the times when you'd have him charge across the court and stop for, like, an 18-footer. And kind of scratch your head as to, like, what the point of that was. But he's been cutting down a lot on that. Just really trusting his teammates, trying to play within the offense more. And kind of just by keeping things simple, he's really flourished this season.
Yes, you mentioned the book of Giannis. That is the 23 best plays of Giannis's career in a Bucks uniform. That is at jsonline.com. It does have a brand new entry from this game where Eric Bledsoe threw that alley-oop thunderous jam in the midst of a pretty big comeback as the Bucks move past the Nuggets in the latter stages of that game. That the book of Giannis is intended to have one play for every year of Giannis's lifetime. So we're going to add a 24th play at some point here early in December when Giannis actually turns the ripe old age of 24 years old, which you still have to kind of pinch yourself. I think I've got a couple in hand. I think we're going to be okay. I'm going to talk about this game against Chicago as well as the Memphis game in a second here. I want to do a little big picture looking at a couple injuries. John Henson and Dante DiVincenzo both out with injury. DiVincenzo's been out the last couple games, probably will miss at least one more. Henson out a little bit more longer term. You know, a few podcasts ago, I said, well, there's so few pieces to this team that you could say, you know, they absolutely cannot live without, with Giannis being the obvious exception and maybe a couple others. So in theory, they have enough interchangeable parts, enough depth to overcome these injuries. But what do you think losing John Henson, and to a lesser extent because it's a shorter time span, Dante DiVincenzo, what do you think that does for this Bucks team?
Yeah, the Henson injury will definitely test their depth. You know, that's one thing the Bucks have tried to tout this season, is that they have that depth. They have guys, you know, who have experience on the back end of their bench and guys that they trust. But that trust is going to get put to the test. I mean, Thon Maker had, you know, a nice game against the Chicago Bulls on Friday. He didn't do much of anything positive against the Nuggets on Monday night. He didn't get a ton of playing time because when he did get in, that coincided with the Nuggets going on a big run. He really didn't, affect the game positively, and he didn't come back. And so that's obviously puts more pressure on guys like Brook Lopez to play more minutes at the five, more pressure on Ersan Ilyasova maybe to play some minutes as a quote unquote small ball five, just to give the Bucks kind of different looks and consistency, you know, on both ends. Because John Henson had been having a great season. You know, he had locked down that backup center spot. He was shooting threes at a pretty high rate, I think 35.5%, which, you know, for him is pretty great. On I think 31 attempts, which is way more than he had taken throughout his whole career. And defensively, he's a veteran. He knows where he needs to be. He knows what he needs to do. He worked within that system. He had a good rapport with a lot of different guys, you know, on both ends. Just a really steady contributor. So to have him out, you know, we'll have to see if Thon Maker can find the consistency that has eluded him in his early career. And if not, you know, the Bucks are either going to have to, you know, like I said, fill in that time with more minutes from Brook Lopez or more minutes of the five from Ersan Ilyasova, or, you know, maybe Christian Wood gets a chance at some point, depending on how things go. But yeah, definitely we'll be missing Henson a bunch. DiVincenzo will miss at least Wednesday's game as he deals with a quad strain. He was out Friday, out Monday. He'll miss Wednesday, and maybe he could be back by Friday, but he'll be reevaluated after Wednesday, and the Bucks will kind of see where he stands and what his situation is. I know it's something that had been nagging him a little bit. I don't think there's any type of major push to get him back on the court. They want him to get healed. They want him to be, ready. And in the meantime, you know, that just means more opportunities for Pat Connaughton, who has been playing well through the first month or so of the season. And we've seen Sterling Brown get in for a couple spot minutes here and there. And, you know, he's going to get his feet wet a little bit and see what he can bring.
Going now back to that Bucks game, I don't even know how to describe it. I mean, that Bulls game, Bucks-Bulls game. The Bulls are bad, objectively terrible, especially on defense. And they took a 22-point lead in the first half against the Bucks. Nothing was going right. And then, of course, the Bucks bit back in the biggest way. They end up leading by 22 at one point, settling for a 19-point victory. That's an insane game. There, of course, are some clips of the Bulls pretending to play defense, which had a lot of people laughing. But how do you describe that game? I mean, certainly the Bucks played poorly, but then obviously they finished strong. I mean, is that considered sort of a letdown game, even in victory, or just an incredible comeback? How do you describe that game?
Yeah, I think it's one that, you know, I know Mike Budenholzer was still pretty, a little prickly after the game, just about that first half. Just, you know, I was asking about kind of how, you know, their offense has been predicated on ball movement, player movement, unselfishness, all that stuff, and kind of started to ask about the first half, and he's like, no, like it wasn't there. I didn't have any of those things in the first half, you know, but in the second half, they kind of, you know, all the player, of course, Bud, you know, he credits the players for turning things around and playing really well in that second half and getting back to what he needed to do, and all the players were like, no, it was Bud. In the second, at halftime, he was in here and he was mad. Like he came in and you know, kind of let him have it a little bit, and they responded. You know, they went from a team that you know, it looked like they kind of just rolled out of bed and started playing. And meanwhile, the Bulls were treating it like the Super Bowl, like their own personal like Super Bowl or something. Like Justin Holiday was 6 of 6 on threes. Jabari Parker was in full revenge mode. Like everything was going right for the Bulls, and then suddenly like things kind of went the way you would have expected from the jump. Like the Bulls are, you know, undoubtedly the inferior team in that situation, and the Bucks kind of just took over, you know, exploited every defensive weakness the Bulls had. Giannis got going, Middleton got going, Bledsoe got going. You know, obviously the Bulls had shot like lights out in the first half. That wasn't going to hold up. Jabari Parker kind of turned into the guy where, you know, in the first half you're like, oh man, how'd the Bucks let that guy go? And the second half you were like, oh yeah, that's why. Like, cause he, you know, it's like he couldn't make really any shots. His defense and kind of motor were shot. Zach LaVine, who I guess was fighting some kind of illness, you know, he took a lot of questionable shots trying to force things on offense. I know Eric Bledsoe was against him for a decent portion of the game and made things tough for him. But still, you know, LaVine kind of tried to force the issue. I mean, he is one of their top players, somebody who, you know, they need to play well if they're going to win. You know, so I wouldn't call it really a letdown game because the Bucks did win and they won handily. And I wouldn't really call it an incredible comeback because they did what they were supposed to do. It was kind of like if you saw the final score after the fact, you'd be like, oh yeah, that's what was supposed to happen. And it, you know, it took a weird route to get there, but you know, that's what it was supposed to be.
As much as you can look at a week in which a team moved to 12-4 and won 2 of the 3 games since we last podcast, you could look at it as a little bit of a disappointing week in that they struggled against Denver before rallying, although Denver's a pretty good team. They did have that Bulls game, which they, like you said, did what they were supposed to do. And then they lost to Memphis, which is, again, one of the best, right now, one of the 3 best teams in the West. So no shame there. I completely discounted them on the last podcast, and it was very much ashamed after watching them play because they're obviously a very good team. Mike Conley went off. Jaren Jackson's a bright young player. So, I don't know. The Memphis game felt like a missed opportunity because the Bucks did pull into the lead late, looked like they might be pulling away, and then Memphis came back. Conley was amazing. I don't know if there's really much more to say about the Memphis game. It's a little bit of a missed opportunity, but Memphis is very good, and it seems like they caught the Bucks on another kind of a sleepy night at times.
Yeah, I mean you're right about that. I mean, the Bucks were it's just been a trend for the past few games. They just haven't gotten going, haven't been consistent, have kind of been staggering a little bit before trying to pull it together. And in that Memphis game, they did. I mean, they were up 5 with like, you know, 5 minutes left. And then, you know, they kind of thought, okay, we made the big comeback. We're in the lead. Pfizer Forum is rocking. Like, things are great. But the game wasn't over. You know, it was like, you know, Garrett Temple had 6 straight points, you know, and boom, like the Grizzlies are back in the lead. And then that's just the start of a 12-0 run where the Bucks kind of just don't really put up enough of a fight against it. And there's also the issue with the refs, you know, where Malcolm Brogdon gets kind of pushed a little bit, goes out of bounds, that the refs don't call it. You know, the Grizzlies score at the other end. They're up 102-99. Mike Budenholzer kind of steps out on the court. He calls timeout, starts walking on the court, kind of gestures, you know, shrugging his shoulders at the ref, Fantasy Ransom, and says, "What was that?" And immediately gets teed up and kicked out because he'd already gotten a technical early in the game that he definitely earned more than that one. You know, and just a stretch of, you know, turnover, turnover, technical foul, turnover, 2 missed free throws. I mean, just everything was going wrong. And like, even still, like the Bucks actually, despite all of that, had a shot at the buzzer to try and tie a Chris Middleton 29 footer that bounced off the backboard, bounced off the rim, you know, and harmlessly away. So, you know, I think they might have underestimated the Grizzlies a little bit, just like I think we did. That team with Conley and Gasol, which it's just so nice to see Mike Conley playing again. He's so good. Like, it's just a treat. But to see those guys back on the court, you know, with that young core that they have, you know, that team is going to grind and they're going to work hard every night And if you're not going to work hard, then they're going to make things really hard for you. And their ability to control the pace and dictate the pace throughout the night, you know, that was the difference. You know, the Bucks struggled to kind of break things open and play at the regular faster pace that they like to play at. And, you know, when they were forced to play more in the half court and at the speed the Grizzlies wanted, it definitely played into Memphis's hands.
Before we get to a couple offbeat subjects, look ahead a little bit here. The Blazers will be in town on Wednesday, and then the Suns and the Spurs as the Bucks round out this six-game homestand. The Blazers, one of the few teams, one of the four teams to have beaten the Bucks the first time around. They, too, like Memphis, are one of the top three teams in the West as we sit here on Tuesday recording this. I'm curious if there's anybody of these three teams that you're really looking forward to see play, any matchups that you're really curious about, or... you know, or what it is that with three teams that we're not going to see a lot of this year, what to expect.
Yeah, I honestly think they'll all be kind of fun. I mean, you look at the Blazers and what they were able to do the Bucks the last time they played, and you would expect that the Bucks would come out a little bit angry, a little bit, you know, like they're looking for a revenge game of sorts. Everybody I talked to in the locker room after that game, and even a couple games after, kind of referenced that as a game that they definitely didn't play to the level they're capable of. Obviously, in a 15-point loss, that's kind of what you would expect.
Yeah, that might be the only loss this year that you could truly say the Bucks looked like they were not going to win that game. That's the only one. They haven't been within like a possession or two toward the end, right?
Yeah, they got within six with a few minutes left, and then the Blazers were like, ha-ha, no, and they went on an 8-0 run, and it was over. So, you know, that one, I think the Bucks, you know, you'd expect that they'd get up for. You know, and Malcolm Brogdon especially will have to kind of take up the challenge of guarding C.J. McCollum. Obviously, I don't know if McCollum can play as well as he did in that game, a 40-point scoring night where he shot really well from the field, including making 8 of 9 against Brogdon as the primary defender. You know, so he's going to have to take up that challenge and battle him. And, you know, last game, Eric Bledsoe, you know, held Damian Lillard, mostly with Bledsoe as a primary defender, to just 13 points, including 11 in the first quarter. So after that, he wasn't much of a scoring threat for the Blazers. So I'm interested to see kind of how that matchup plays out. And we'll have to see if the Bucks again can really dictate the pace and kind of get going early instead of kind of waiting to rev up. Because when that happens against, you know, really good teams like the Trail Blazers, it's a lot harder to dig your way out. And then looking at the Suns, like, I don't know exactly what they're going to be. I think in general, they're not going to be good in terms of, like, you know, the standings, but there's just so many guys. Like, I mean, Devin Booker is fun to watch. I'm interested to check out DeAndre Ayton, you know, Mikal Bridges, just what those guys in the future might become and where they are now. I think that's kind of the shine on that matchup. And then the Spurs, I mean, the Spurs are just a confusing team in general. You know, they play differently than most teams in the NBA. They still kind of go into the mid range and rely on LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan to make things happen. And they kind of have this weird hodgepodge of guys on their roster. And yet, like, you know, they win, you know, some pretty big games. They lose some games that you kind of scratch your head at. And like, I don't really know what they are. But of course, that game also brings the reunion of Mike Budenholzer and Greg Popovich, you know, two people who spent a long time coaching together in San Antonio. So that there's some specialness to that matchup, you know. And I'll be interested in the Bucks that game just to see how they handle three games in 4 days. I doubt they practice on Thanksgiving. So you have a Wednesday game, Thursday's Thanksgiving, and then, boom, Friday, Saturday, back-to-back, before they then go out onto the road Monday. So I wonder where, at the end of a six-game homestand, just kind of where their energy is at, just how polished they look, and if they can finish strong with that homestand. Right now, they're 2-1. They could easily be 1-2. They could easily be 3-0. I mean, there's a lot of games that, you know, they were all fairly close, except for that Bulls one. I guess the Memphis and the Denver ones were pretty close. The Bulls ones looked like a lost cause for a while, but, you know, like we said, it ended up going the way it was expected to. But with these three games against, you know, some tough Western Conference teams, you know, how much can they take advantage of being at home for the 2 weeks that they've been here in closing out this homestand?
Okay, so as promised, a couple offbeat topics. We talked about the City Edition jerseys on the last podcast, but we did finally get to see them in action on Monday night in the win over Denver. Now that you've seen them in the flesh, yay or nay on the City jerseys, has your opinion changed?
I think they're fine. Like, I'm not as as worked up, but as a lot of people. I think that I think they're very they're the kind of thing where you a lot of people are prone to strong opinions on them. Some people love them and some people absolutely hate them. And I'm kind of in the middle. I kind of appreciate that the Bucks got creative and tried to do something different with their City Edition jersey. It seems like this is something that they'll try and change every year. It's not like they're the Phoenix Suns who just like trotted out like Los Suns again. Like, it's just kind of boring. But you know, they tried something different. They tried to honor their past, and mix things up a little bit, and that's cool. But at the same time, they're pretty loud. They're not all that visually appealing. I think there are little elements of them that are nice. I think a lot of people agree the shorts are very nice and wearable, and just kind of good. I don't know, but the whole ensemble, it isn't doing it for me like the cream jerseys did last year, the cream City Edition jerseys. Those I definitely like more than these. But so far, I mean, I don't mind them. I think opinions will maybe fluctuate on them depending on what their record is when they wear them.
I totally agree with you there.
I know last year the cream ones, they got off to like, I think they won like 4, 5, 6 in a row, like wearing those cream jerseys. And I may be misremembering that, but I know they had a pretty good record wearing them to start. So, you know, if they can do something similar with these Mecca inspired jerseys, then, you know, I think people might start to think differently of them. But of course, if they start losing them, then the opinion will go the other way and people will say, get these out of here.
Yes, I made the joke that I did not like them when they were losing, and then in the fourth quarter when they were winning, I thought they were quite flashy indeed. So I will certainly be a windsock for these sorts of things. I don't really feel as strongly as many do. You had mentioned you did an AMA on the Bucks subreddit on Reddit, which was kind of a cool thing that you did a couple days ago. And one of the questions related to Bradley Beal of the Wizards. The Wizards are in a little bit of a disrepair. That's putting it nicely. John Wall just got fined for talking. Saying some nasty stuff to his coach, Scott Brooks, but it looks like they might be on the verge of a fire sale. Somebody asked about Bradley Beal. He'd be a good fit here. I think the economics of that probably aren't likely, but do you think that the Bucks would pursue anybody on that Wizards roster if they did, in fact, tear it all down?
Maybe. I mean, I don't think that there's any path towards bringing in like a John Wall because he's owed like $1 billion over the next couple of years, because they just put him on the Supermax that hasn't even like kicked in yet. You know, so he's got a crazy contract, which just, you know, realistically with the salary cap isn't going to work. I mean, starting next year, he's going to be making $37.8 million, and that goes up every year, ending with a $46.8 million contract that's a player option, which I don't know why he turned that down, in 2022, 2023. So just the financial side of it just doesn't work. Bradley Beal obviously is on a more reasonable contract, like 99% of the NBA. You know, he's locked up this year and the next two, topping out at $28.7 million. You know, so that's, you know, on the free agent market, that's probably what he'd be worth or somewhere in that ballpark. But the problem with making a trade for Beal is that the Bucks would need to send things that the Wizards wanted. Like, they need to send players and picks that the Wizards would be interested in. And right now, I don't see how that would work, considering the Bucks' best trade assets. You know, you look at, you know, potential trade assets. I'm not saying any of these guys are on the block or anything. But, you know, Chris Middleton, Eric Bledsoe, Brooke Lopez, Malcolm Brogdon, like, none of those guys are, like, secured over the course of the next few seasons. I mean, Middleton has a player option for next year, but he could opt out of that and become an unrestricted free agent. Eric Bledsoe is about to become a free agent. Brooke Lopez is on a one-year deal right now, about to become a free agent. Malcolm Brogdon, I think if he was traded now, I think that any team he was traded to would inherit his bird rights and would be able to have the right to keep him in restricted free agency. But that doesn't mean that they would if some team came in and offered him a lot more than they were willing to pay. So, you know, all those guys put together, and it's just, you know, there's no secure future. So if you're going to trade away an all-star caliber talent like Bradley Beal, you'd want to get some guys that you know you could have for some time.
And Brogdon has struggled lately. I mean, we haven't talked about that, but not struggled so much, it's just been inconsistent. He's not going to headline a deal for someone like that.
No. And if he's headlining the deal, I mean, the other guys that you're throwing in, like, are generally just going to be bench guys just as salary filler or whatever. And that's not getting a deal like that done. I mean, all you need is, you know, to kind of have the Wizards, like, just stop talking to you is to have a team like the Lakers, who have a bunch of young talent, get on the phone, you know, or any, you know, maybe the Celtics, they have, you know, they have young guys, they have depth, they have pieces they can move. Philly has at least one extra pick. That's a pretty good one if they wanted to do something like that. They also have, you know, different roster pieces they can do things with. You know, there's a whole number of teams who could offer better packages than the Bucks can, and partially because the Bucks, you know, already have their pick for this, their first round pick for this draft. It's promised to the Suns if it falls in a certain range, and based on their current standing, they'd keep the pick, but then it would likely go to the Suns next year. So you only have limited first round picks if you're trying to package those that you can work with. So it just gets a lot more complicated when it comes to trying to figure out how to make that work. And just having any team, like I said, any team or most teams could jump in and offer something better than the Bucks could. That would work financially and with the players, things like that. And you mentioned Brogdon, and yeah, his numbers are fine. Like, you look at like his like counting numbers, his points, rebounds, assists, all that stuff is fine. But it just seems like there's times where he gets caught, you know, with the ball stuck to his hand too much. He's kind of pounding it, not moving it as often as he might need to. Kind of just taking those drives. Basically, I mean, I referenced earlier last year where Bledsoe would kind of try and take over and do some things and maybe ill-advised plays. I think Brogdon has kind of fallen into that a little bit this year. We saw that multiple times against Denver where the offense was flowing. I mean, there was one play late where I think they were up 192 and kind of on a roll. And Brogdon just out of nowhere gets the ball at the top of the key. And instead of continuing to swing it, he kind of just tries to make a drive happen out of nowhere, drives into the paint and gets, I forget if it ended in a block or a turnover or whatever. But he kind of just like lone wolfed it for a little bit there and it just didn't work. And obviously he can be a dynamic playmaker when he does have the ball on his hands and he's playing within the flow of the offense. He's a great 3-point shooter. He can finish with either hand at the rim. He can make things happen, but just sometimes when the ball gets sticky, you know, his kind of his warts, I guess they might show a little bit. And so I think he's still finding his role and finding where he needs to be as part of the Bucks offensively. But for right now, like I said, his numbers are generally good if you look at counting numbers, but he still has a way to go to improve. There's no doubt that he's one of the best five players on the team and that he should be considered as such. But figure out how to best use him and get him back on the right track is something that the Bucks will need to figure out over time.
Matt Killjoy Velasquez, breaking our dreams apart of seeing Bradley Beal come to the Milwaukee Bucks. You can read everything from Matt Velasquez at jsonline.com. He'll be covering the Milwaukee Bucks all season. And what is still a pretty fun year, 12-4 Milwaukee Bucks. Next up, the Portland Trailblazers on Wednesday night at Pfizer Forum. Thanks for joining us, Matt. Hope you have a pretty good Thanksgiving, and we will chat with you again real soon.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to you too, and to all of you listeners.
That's all we got. Please find us on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, or Spotify for that matter, wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a rating and review. Let us know what you think. You can also reach me at Twitter. Again, my name is J.R. Radcliffe. My Twitter handle is at J.R. Radcliffe, J.R.R.A.D.C.L.I.F.F.E. Matt Velasquez can be found on Twitter at Matt_Velasquez, V.E.L.A.Z.Q.U.E.Z. Let him know what you think. And we'll keep bringing these at you every week at not the same day every week because we're kind of curtailing it or tailoring it, I should say, to the schedule that the Bucks have. But we will try to get you podcasts either Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday of each week and review what we've got going on. Looking ahead, the Bucks, as we've sort of mentioned here, they'll be not at Portland. Portland comes to town Wednesday night. That's a team that beat the Bucks the first time around and really the only team that beat the Bucks handily of the four losses. That's the only one that didn't come down to the wire. I mean, the Clippers went to overtime. We talked about Memphis being kind of a contested three-pointer away in the Boston game, which Boston dominated for most of the game, came down to the final minutes. So this is the only team that's been able to really get a handle on Milwaukee. Then it's Phoenix and San Antonio to close out this homestand. The Bucks will be on the road at Charlotte next Monday, and then another game at home at Pfizer Forum. Chicago comes back again. We'll see a rematch right away. That's Wednesday, November 28th, to wrap up the November portion of the schedule. Thanks for tuning in. You can also find the Journal Sentinel Badgers podcast, Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast, which just had an episode last Friday in the wake of the awards being awarded in Major League Baseball. Craig Counsell, runner-up for Manager of the Year. Christian Yelich, the National League MVP. So we talked about that. I talked about that with Tom Hodricourt, the Brewers beat reporter for the Journal Sentinel. Badgers beat reporter Jeff Patricus joins me every week to talk about the Badgers football team. We've got some basketball to talk about. You can find all that on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or at jsonline.com. Thanks for listening this week. We'll chat with you again soon.